And welcome to the Disciplined Investor Podcast. This is episode number 36. And I have something very special planned for you today. We're going to go right into an interview in a moment with a gentleman named Timothy Sykes. He is the author of a book called An American Hedge Fund. And a gentleman, a young man who made kind of a rags-to-riches story and back again slightly and now really trying to break apart and dispel some of the myths involved in the hedge fund industry as well as investing overall. With that in mind, for those of you who don't know me, this is Andrew Horowitz. I am the host of The Disciplined Investor, here to help you with your money issues, your concerns, your overall, really, the profiting from your portfolios. That's why I'm here. We have lots of things to catch up on since last week because it's been a continuing the wild ride in Wall Street. And we're going to get to that in just a moment. But for right now, let's get to this. The fact is that we are in an unprecedented time of credit concerns. We are in a situation that is much different than we've ever seen it. We are almost back to where it was with the savings and loan crisis many years ago. We've had a poisoning of the water by the financial institutions, the top men who were there to help us create liquidity, to really get the American dream, and they turn into quite the American nightmare. Right now, there has been hedge rolling all over Wall Street. They're going to continue to roll. Be very careful out there. Stay away from much of the top-end players. Stay away from the companies that may have dividend cuts moving in, like we just saw with Freddie Mac, which is cutting their dividend in response to the increasing pressure that they've seen to keep the reserve minimums intact in order to make sure that they can back up much of the financials. But don't be swayed by this. There will be a day, there will be a capitulation in these markets, and what will happen is there will be a very strong rally making up some of the ground that we lost in this fear-laden situation. Well, enough of that. I'm really tired of this bad news. Let's get into another quick topic and realize that this retail season was quite amazing. As a matter of fact, the Cyber Monday, as we call it, the online retail spending, has hit an all-time record. That's right, an all-time record, and we saw a reasonable amount of consumer spending during the Black Friday, if you will, right after Thanksgiving. What does that mean? Well, even though we came in with a consumer confidence rating that was about 5 points under the expectation because a lot of doom and gloom out there, people were still spending, and that's a good thing. That's what's going to drive these markets, and that's why we saw the powerful rally early in the week. So rest assured, here's the point. That because of the strong consumer, the low dollar, and the fact that there's a lot of spending going on, we still have a very, very strong internal economy, even though consumer confidence is concerning right now, but that's temporary. That is based on the housing situation and the news. The people are looking at all this problems that has been perpetrated upon the American people due to the fact that the CEOs and management, people at the top of Citibank and Bank of America, Bear Stearns, Lehman Brothers, and the list goes on and on, have poisoned the waters by creating incredible profits for themselves at the expense of the average investor. That's a problem that will shake out as we see more people coming into the rescue. Not to worry about that. So as promised, we're going to get right into this interview with our friend Timothy Sykes, author of the book, An American Hedge Fund. American Hedge Fund is all about the trials and tribulations of a young man who started out with $12,000 in his bar mitzvah fund and amassed $2.1 million by the time he was done a few years later. And don't think it was just from 12 to 15. He actually did a little bit more than that. He actually spent some time doing some trading during the time he was in college, but used those funds as the beginning. So stick around. We'll be right back on the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This is Kristen Bentz with TheStreet.com's Real Money, and you're listening to the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager.
All right, we have a really exciting person on the phone. I tell you, this guy, Timothy Sykes, I've been talking to him a bit, reading his work and spending some time understanding what he has to say. And he's joining us today to tell us all about his venture in life as well as some interesting things, hopefully, about the hedge fund universe. So, Tim Sykes, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
So let's get into this discussion. For those of you, for those out there that don't know who Tim Sykes is, give me the abbreviated version of from bar mitzvah money of about $12,000 to all the way through hedge fund when you were a bit older to $2.1 million of overall earnings. Tell me how that happened.
Yeah, basically, my parents gave me my bar mitzvah gift money. They gave me control of it back in 1999 when I was a senior in high school. It was just sitting in an account. It was $12,415. And I said, go to work, have fun. And I opened up an online discount brokerage. They thought I would lose everything. They thought it would be a good lesson. And instead, trading thousands upon thousands of penny stocks, small caps, and micro caps, I turned that $12,000 into basically $2 million. Throughout the senior year of high school and my 4 years of college. Senior year of college, I started my own hedge fund, not because, you know, I had any idea what I was doing, just because I had family and friends that wanted to invest in me with me. And, you know, I needed a legal structure to make that happen. So began my hedge fund experience in 2003, which lasted all the way until October 1st of 2007. I was the number one short bias ranked hedge fund, even though I failed miserably at raising assets because, as you read in my book, An American Hedge Fund, it's very unknown universe. And, yeah. You know, I still traded, but asset raising is a whole nother ballgame.
Right, exactly. So there's an interesting separation there, I agree with you, between the whole idea of bringing in money but managing money. That's two different sides of the whole equation. But let me ask you a couple questions. First of all, you tell me that I find it interesting and that your parents gave you money that they thought you may fail miserably and kind of maybe it would stop you from asking them over and over. So they said, oh, finally have at it. Is that something, and you were out to prove them wrong? Is that how it started?
I mean, I was kind of interested in the market, but this was 1999. I was a tennis player. I was injured, so I had two casts on my arms. I had surgery. So there's really nothing for me to do other than, work on the computer. So online stock trading was a natural fit. But, you know, everyone thinks of penny stocks and trading as gambling. I thought I saw patterns, and I did want to prove them wrong. I wanted to prove everybody, and I proved it to myself, you know. But now that I have this book and in my website, TimothySykes.com, I'm going back to my 12,000 roots, and I'm going to try and do it all over again, this time detailing every single trade to show people that, look, it is possible. This is not a freak of nature. This is not luck. It's just hard work.
Well, one of the things I want to ask you is this. So everybody understands this. You know, obviously – you know, that's a big gain, you know, a tremendous amount of money. It takes a lot of work, a lot of trading, a lot of discipline. And obviously, there's a lot of risk involved there. You weren't just doing this buying Coca-Cola, obviously. I mean, you really put some, you know, there was some risk involved in this. Give me an example of your average day, you know, during the height of your trading. What was going on?
There's a ton of risk. I'm glad that you brought that up because, you know, this is why nobody on CNBC talks about these companies, because they're not allowed to talk about anything under $500 million. This creates opportunity. So back in 99, 2000 was obviously the peak of my trading. You know, I still made money after the bubble, but there was nothing like 2000. So I'd get up in the morning, you know, there'd be five or six penny stocks, stocks trading below $10 a share that were up between 20 and 50% for the day. And these are all speculative companies. They all have different stories. You know, they have some miraculous technology that's going to make cell phones better. It doesn't even matter what the story is. You know, it's all about hype and momentum. So I would look to play these, whatever stocks were in play, and see if the hype would continue or if it would die down. And over time, I gradually learned that certain news releases, like if an analyst or a newsletter mentions a company and the stock is up 50%, usually it's very temporary. But if a company reports great earnings, even as speculative and tiny as they are, great earnings mean a lot going forward because now it's not just a speculative story, it could be a fundamental play. So you're trying to determine which stocks to short sell and which stocks to buy, and I can go either way. This is why I've been successful. Most people only buy stocks. They don't know that. You can actually make money short selling by betting that companies fail. I mean, there's a lot of idiots on Wall Street, so you should be able to take advantage of that.
Right. Well, the problem is that, unfortunately, let me ask you something. Would you agree that there's a lot of things that the average investor isn't told, not for the sake of helping them, but for the sake of making them be the sheep, if you will, in the whole process, making them be just the underlying support. For example, the whole idea of buy and hold, right? Great idea. I do understand the whole general concept. It's very clear to me as an advisor, as a money manager, and as an investor that buy and hold has its place. But would you not only would you agree with the fact that the reason why it is hammered into the head of the average Joe investor out there is so that there is a maintaining the stability of the market for the big guys? Does that make sense?
Definitely. There's a whole infrastructure. You have all the brokers. You have all this liquidity. They're taking your $1,000 and they're lending it out 10 times over, and they want you to buy and hold so that you don't touch it, so they can keep lending it out and leveraging it.
Right. Through so other people can short, so they can short, so they can do various leveraging processes. But
yeah,
now,
I mean, the money of the average investors greases the wheel of this financial industry, and we keep needing more grease in order to keep it flowing, if you will.
Right. No, I understand that. I totally understand. And I think most people do not understand that there are other alternatives. And I'm not advocating anything here. I'm not saying do this or do that. But I'm just saying that there's a whole world of investing out there that most people have no idea what it's all about. Now, whether or not you make 100% a year, 10% a year, 20%, that's not the point. The point is there's a lot of alternatives to the average mutual fund.
Yes, and this is why, this is why I started a hedge fund. This is why, unfortunately, I made my money through short selling, which is considered a crazy speculative process.
You're a bad American. You're a bad American. A bad boy.
I'm unpatriotic, right? And I'm betting against companies. Sure, I would love to be a long-term investor. I would love to root for these companies to succeed. But in my experience, especially with all these speculative plays, not one of them. Okay, one of them, Dynamic Materials, symbol B-O-O-M.
Yeah, know them well. Know them well.
Yeah, they were the one penny stock I have ever played to go legitimate, if you will, because now they're trading around $60 a few years later. But out of thousands, only one has ever made it. This makes me cynical. This makes me a good short seller.
Yeah, no, obviously you have to be cynical to be a short seller. So let's fast forward here. So now you're sitting in your office. Give me one more visual. Tell me what it is that it looks like, whether it's your house, your room, your office. What does it look like as a guy who's doing a lot of trading? What does your desktop look like with your screens and what you're looking at, what you're observing, what you're reading? How's that all play out?
I sit in my bedroom or my living room. I live in about 8 different places in the past 8 years. I'm a trader in life and in the stock market. But I've always had this desk with my 3-screen monitor. One screen is for charts, one screen is for quotes, and the other one is just for the internet when I can look up news or message boards or whatever. And you really need to have all these different kind of information flowing. Some people look at technical analysis only or fundamental analysis only. I look at everything. I want to get a whole picture of every single stock and the entire market, because obviously 3 out of 4 stocks follow the market.
Right.
William O'Neill likes to say.
Yeah, absolutely. So. It does. I mean, you don't want to be a part of that wave on the crash, obviously. But that's interesting because, as you know, you've read part of my book, as you've told me, the fact is that all these components, I don't think there's – I never pound the desk only for quantitative or for fundamental or technical analysis. I think there's a great combination that can be used to give you the whole picture. When you look at a menu when you're having dinner, you don't just look at the appetizers only and say, okay, I'm not going to look at the desserts. I mean, it's all big package. And the fact is to have a well-rounded – you want to have this well-rounded approach. That's why each and every chapter I wrote about kind of discovers each important component, as I see it at least, in the investment market. All right, so let's talk about...
Well, and this is why I liked your book, because it does give you an overview. And, going back to the menu thing, I mean, there's 3 different steaks. You don't just buy a steak. You have to look at how it's prepared.
Right.
And how it's prepared is all these different variables.
Right, and some are overpriced and some are not, actually. But let me ask you, so now you have this experience making just gobs of money. I read one passage in your book, actually, that talks about you had this great day that I think it was the girlfriend day that talks about when you had some issues, you overslept a little bit. And fortunately, that was a good thing. You made about 100 and I think it was 125,000 that day in profits, if my memory is correct. And so you had some great days. You've also probably had some pretty bad days. But looking back on all of this, looking just, saying, okay, I see what I did when I was a hedge fund, an individual trader. What is it for the guy listening out there, the girl, the woman listening out there, that you can impart what's going on today that could either help them understand how they can benefit or how they cannot get hurt? What's the lessons you've learned?
The lessons I've learned is basically you need to be able to go both ways, either long or short. It is so incredibly stupid to always have to be bullish because, you know, we've had 4 great years of being bullish, and now it looks you have all this credit concerns, you have leverage, you have oil, you have currency risk. There's so much risk, it's very difficult to be bullish right now. So if you're open to short selling, if you're open to being, quote, unpatriotic and betting against America, and realizing economic reality that, look, America has been a leader for so long, maybe, just maybe, it won't continue to be because you have countries like China that are surging forward, and, you know, the numbers are just astounding. So just be open, and this is all I'm saying. You know, everyone is so narrow-minded when it comes to their investing. A lot of, you know, when I was promoting my book, when I'm trying to get book reviews, a lot of value investors wouldn't read it because they're value investors, and my book is pure trading. So I think that's ridiculous. You know, I think you have to learn about every single kind of investment, every single option, so that you can better understand the market, and that then you can make a better decision.
Yeah, I hear you. When we get back, we're going to continue with Timothy Sykes, who's author of the book, An American Hedge Fund, and has a great website, timothysykes.com. We'll have links on the website under the notes for this show about that. We're going to talk about the problems with hedge funds today as he sees it. We're going to also talk about his going from glory to, well, a little bit of problems we'll talk about in a second, and he's going to tell you some tips on how to actually trade. So hang around. We'll be right back on the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is now available on the new Zoom Marketplace and other fine podcast directories.
Looking for answers to today's complex financial markets? Then be sure to get your copy of The Disciplined Investor, Essential Strategies for Success, your all-in-one guide to investing. Order now at thedisciplinedinvestor.com or your favorite bookstore. The Disciplined Investor. Together, we will reach success.
All right, as I said, we are back. We are back with a great guy who is a hedge fund manager at a maverick in the investment world, all under the age of 30, Timothy Sykes, best-selling author of An American Hedge Fund. You can find that on Amazon and a few other places. We'll have that again on our site so you can link to it. Tell me something, Tim. Tell me what you've learned about from all your studies. You read a lot of books, right?
Yes.
Okay, so what's...
You can go on my website. I have 300 books. They're all finance and business. I hate fiction for whatever reason. This is what I read.
Okay. Some of it is fiction, or almost seeming like it seems, in terms of the history. So what's that all about? You mean you have a book group? You call... What's the name of your group?
Well, I mean, I have the library, but I started my own publishing company, Bullshit Press. Mind you, it's with a P at the end, Bullshit. I basically just want to cut through all the BS that's in this industry because I see all these financial authors, you know, they write books, basically sugar-coated books that talk about their life and the world of finance, but they don't really get to the heart of the matter because they can't risk their career because being an author is not their main career. So
yeah.
I closed down my hedge fund, actually, to release my book because once you read my book, you'll see I make a lot of boneheaded mistakes. And it's not the end of the world. The key is learning from it and admitting to it. And well, that's what Bullshit Press is all about. It's cutting through everything.
But you also, I think, from one of the things that I really picked up on that I like was that you are, not that you're doing an expose on the hedge fund industry, but you are talking about some of the rampant problems with it. Give me a few examples.
Well, I mean, right now it's just for wealthy investors only. So all the average people think that it doesn't apply to them. You know, non-wealthy investors say, oh, hedge funds, they have $2 trillion, but it's only for millionaires. Who cares? They should care because right now hedge funds are $2 trillion, but with leverage, I mean, hedge funds can do anything. Hedge funds can – it might be a $200 trillion industry, but there is no transparency. Hedge funds aren't required to disclose their positions. So you have all these funds taking leverage bets every which way, and I do think that it's playing a part in the market, and I think that a lot of it is, you know, responsible for this volatility that we've had lately, and I think it could be a catastrophic, possibly. I'm not saying that, you know, I'm not saying, oh, the world's going to end tomorrow, but I'm saying that it is potentially catastrophic because we have no idea what all this money is doing, and everyone thinks that it doesn't apply to them.
Well, I'll tell you something. I'll go one step further. I will stake my a dollar at least on this. The fact of the matter is that when you and I, well, maybe not you, what you're doing. Let me just share this. When the average investor is trading one share of a stock, and they look at the alternative of investing in a hedge fund, that hedge fund may be actually investing 4 shares of a stock with the same amount of money because of the leverage. Therefore, Number one, there's a tremendous amount of volatility that has been blossomed out of this, because what we are seeing is just the exponential use of the multiplier effect of the shares just from leverage. The second issue is that due to liquidity concerns on the downside, that's why we're seeing such a tremendous amount of this movement. And it's all based on the excessive use of leverage, which in the end will prove out. Because when you were trading, my friend, what did you do? What was your biggest, what was your best friend? It was leverage, liquidity. Right? It was liquidity and leverage, yeah. Right? You weren't.
Well, I actually never used leverage, to tell you the truth. I hate leverage. You know, I this one book in my library, Extraordinary Popular Delusions and the Madness of Crowds, they talk all about the South Sea Bubble, John Law in France in the, what is it, 1700s. Mm-hmm. And ever since I read that book in freshman year in college, I have never used leverage.
You're telling me when you traded on a daily basis, you never margined up on the trade?
Exactly. This
really?
Is why I am restarting with 12,000, TimothySykes.com, because I am crazy for being a stock trader who doesn't like leverage.
It's interesting, because with the day trading rules, so anywhere from 4 to, I think, I don't know, I've heard of 8 times multiples when you trade, it would seem like a logical opportunity for maybe not a hedge fund manager, but a day trader to utilize the daily internal trading power that you have with that. But if you didn't, that's even more power to you that you made that much money.
Trust me, this is my whole point and my strategy, which is why I think that it's so good, because yes, I am risking, you know, sometimes I risk 25% of my assets in one play, but I don't put everything in. And, you know, this is why I never went to prop firms, because it's all leverage. I am just so anti-leverage. It gets me crazy. And now that I've restarted with 12,000, I'm up to about 14,000 after 2 weeks, a few good trades. But, you know, there's this pattern day trading rule, which I've never had to deal with, where if you have under $25,000, you cannot day trade more than 4 or 5 times per week, which is moronic to me. But, you know, the SEC obviously has to look out for the widows and orphans. So it kind of penalizes the 99% of other people that are on it.
Yeah, no, I know. The rules are really crazy. You know, many. I don't want to go into all the details, but some of the rules are so archaic when it comes to advice and management of money and, you know, personally.
Because we live in a litigious society. Everyone
right.
is so afraid of getting sued. And so you have these rules that are just ridiculous. I mean, people that like my book, they cannot even comment on it publicly because they're in the finance industry. This is an amazing SEC/finance industry rule where if you're in the industry, you can't write book reviews. Well, I mean, that's not even human, is it?
I got to tell you something. You want to hear the strangest thing? I'm a registered investment advisor with the SEC, and due to the just crazy, crazy thing, I can't do a lot of things. I can't be a hedge fund, because to be a hedge fund, I'd have to give up my this particular licensure. I mean, that doesn't make any sense,
yeah.
does it? I mean, it doesn't make any sense. You know, performance-based
this
fees.
Is why I created a financial rights movement called Freedom of Finance. I just want there to be a lot more freedom. You know, I was a philosophy major, so I'm an idealist. But I think that we're sacrificing a little too much for all this rules and not getting sued. You know, maybe somebody will sue me. I don't know.
Yeah, you don't want to be sued.
Well, if I'm honest, you know, this is why whenever I talk, I say before anything I say, there's a skull and crossbones, because what I do is dangerous.
Right.
So it's like a Surgeon General's warning.
Yeah, proceed at your own risk. Tell me about transparency. You know, we had some Rule FD a few years ago, which declared that there should be greater transparency in the investment markets for giving, you know, no longer are we allowed to give advanced warning or information to special partners, traders, et cetera. Everybody has to get at the public and the traders at the same time. I'm sure you're an advocate of the basic tenets of rule regulation FD, but what about the basic transparency of the markets? Do you really think, I mean, seriously, that all of it's a good thing? Because I would say, I'm not suggesting that myself or anybody else shouldn't have total transparency and know what's going on, but I think too much knowledge sometimes is not always a good thing.
Oh, I agree completely. You know, like CNBC and all these other channels and media outlets waste so much time on saying the person speaking, his family doesn't own shares. I mean, you have these stupid little disclaimers that waste people time, and they focus on it, and you have all these people saying, oh, the insider bought today. He bought 1,000 shares at $38. He's an insider. He must know something. The stock
right.
is going higher. So you have all these people focusing on these, they're just minute details that due to this transparency and everyone thinking that this stuff actually matters, people are focusing on the wrong stuff. When I'm talking about transparency, I'm talking about detailing your winners and your losers, saying exactly what your position is, exactly what your reasoning is, and saying, look, sometimes I screwed up. I lost. There's 100 hedge funds closing every single day, and we have no idea why, because nobody in the industry who wants to remain in the industry can detail their trade, their philosophy, their strategies. There's lessons learned. And this is, I think it's the dark ages for hedge funds and finance, because we're not learning anything. All we're doing is getting mound after mound of stock picks. And people love stock picks, but it doesn't really teach you anything. It's like a gambling. We might as well just go to Vegas and get some free drinks.
Well, not to pound the table about why I wrote my book, but that's the whole point. You know, the whole point is there is processes, whether you use them all or whether you use none of them. The fact is there are some basic tenets of investing that can be used to help you develop the building blocks of a total investment process. And many of those are just core things that we should learn from day one. You know, it's like walking. You know, you walk, you can run, you can drive a car, you can do all these things. Fact is, though, if you don't know any of those things, if you don't have that in your arsenal, there is no chance you're ever going to be successful.
Yeah, I mean, and right now people don't want to learn to walk or run. They just want to hail a taxi and pay the taxi driver $5 to take them to the end of the block, and then they're screwed.
Right, I hear you. So what's the next step? So we have transparency. We have now you're illustrating all of your trades and trying to see if you could either match or at least benefit others from your trading of this going backwards and doing this. What's the next step? You have a TV show that you were on that is kind of a reality show, I guess, of day traders?
Yeah, Wall Street Warriors. It just keeps airing 1,000 times now over the past year. Season 2 is coming out next in 2008, all new characters, though. But, you know, I kind of let loose. My fund was going through a 30% drawdown. I think I was drunk in half the scenes. And I think people can relate, because I think there's a lot of alcoholics in America, especially in finance. But that's besides the point. You know, I'm trying to get away from that. I've rebounded. You know, for all my failure, my fund is down 30% over 3 years, which is, you know, it definitely hurt, but I'm still in the game, and that's what counts. So now I have TimothySykes.com. I'm going to start trading again. I actually have this other thing called Tim TV, which will be debuting in January of 2008, and that's all I can say about that. But it's going to be you know, I just want to make finance understandable, and I want to get away from stock pick after stock pick. I really want to teach the processes and everything that you're talking about in your book.
Why? I mean, as I know that's kind of a loaded question, but seriously, why is it important?
Why? Because, you know, this is why I named my publishing company Bullshit, because people are getting the wrong idea about finance, and since outlets like CNBC, you know, they highlight it every day, so people take it as fact, and they forget that this is all, no one understands the market, okay? The people that really understand the market, they don't talk. They're managing $2 trillion, you know, off the coast of Maui or something. You know, the people that are on TV, all these talking heads, they're just giving their opinions. You cannot take them for experts. You should not take them for being experts, because everybody has an opinion, but no one is willing to share their track records, you know, completely. And I want to cut through all that. You know, I have nothing to hide. I think my strategy is good, and I'm going to talk about it.
All right. So let me ask you a question, because something's been bugging me for a while. And you're pretty adamant about a few of these outlets, and hopefully, you know, you're maintaining your friendship or friendliness with them or not, whatever your story is. But why is it that time and time again, the same, as you call it, as everybody calls it these days, the talking heads, you know, why is it that time and time again, the same people are appearing and discussing their theory when they've been completely wrong all along? In June, when I was pulling my hair out and telling people on this podcast and other places, you need to watch out for what's going on right now. 2 years ago, I specifically told people, go out and get yourself a second home mortgage, because in about a year and a half, don't use it, but in a year or year and a half, what's going to happen is there's not going to be that money available. The credit markets are going to dry up dramatically, and you're going to have all sorts of problems. Now, you didn't hear anybody talking about liquidity through this entire mess. Everybody, as a matter of fact, said there was incredible amounts of liquidity. Why is it that the same people keep on showing up and discussing the same issues over and over again and being completely wrong for months at a time? How is that possible?
Well, that's the media game. You know, I've been on Fox, CNBC, CNN. I love doing that stuff. But it is about your presence and how confident and how articulate you can be. It doesn't matter if you're completely wrong as long as you're articulate, you know, which is, I think, kind of sad. This is why I really want to change things, because I think that you should get on TV if you're proven right, if you have a good track record. So I do think that what they're trying to do is good, but I think that they need a little help with, you know, doing it.
I hear you. It's just amazing to me. It's just amazing to me because, like I said, the whole liquidity game was discussed back in July, very specifically in that ESPN-like show on CNBC. And, you know, there's some real benefit to that show, I suppose, for people because it's still on the air and they enjoy it, so that's great. But they were talking about the fact that there was no liquidity crisis at all. And I've yet to hear anybody say that, you know what, we were a little off on that. I mean, there is a liquidity crisis.
Well, no one's ever, first of all, no one in finance is ever going to admit that they're wrong, because then no one will give them money. You know, you can't make any mistakes on Wall Street, even if you actually do. You just don't fess up to it, and you blame it on some trader intern and say they had too much power. you know, that's what goes on the real Wall Street.
Right.
But, you know, most of the people on Fast Money, I do have to give props to CNBC, because a lot of the people are very qualified. You know, Eric Bolling is a great trader in his mm-hmm. own right. Mm-hmm. So there are some good people, but some people, you know, they're just, I don't know, maybe they just have powerful PR agents.
Yeah, maybe, I suppose. So finally, we talked a little bit about this, but tell me about TIM. I mean, just wrap that up, that point up for me, the transparency. Give me it again.
It's called Transparent Investment Management, TIM for short, because I think I'm clever, but I'm probably not. you know, it's really just all about detailing all my trades, all my investments, and not only just entries and exits, because anybody can post that stuff. I'm giving you 1 to 2 page summaries of why I'm in this trade, what I think the market is doing, how I think the market will influence, and I'm just basically detailing everything that's in my head, because you have to see that. You know, financial speculation is not a simple game. People think, oh, you just buy stocks that you think are going up and sell that are going down. What is that service that there's a service that said that buy stocks that are making new highs, sell stocks that are making new lows.
Right.
And it's completely ridiculous because it's not a simple game. It takes a ton of work. You need dedication. You need discipline. And this is what people need to understand.
So let me ask you
to make it entertaining.
Let's finish on this point or this question. I've always had this problem. I won't name any particular companies, and let's pretend it's a fictional discussion here for a moment, that may flash a particular sound or signal when you buy, and it's easy. And they have these on late-night television shows, and they talk about how easy it is to make money in the markets. And you know, then they hook you in with all sorts of different trading software and training and all sorts of different places that you can go for seminars. What do you think about that?
I think it's ridiculous. I think it's bullshit, and that's why I named my publishing company Bullshit, because there is nothing easy. There's no easy way to make money. Even if you do make money very quickly, I mean, I got rich pretty quick. I made $1 million within a year in college, and little did I know it was the greatest bull market in the history of the world. You know, so sometimes you could be in the right place at the right time. Sometimes stuff will work out for you, but over the long run, you need to understand the process. You need to understand the strategy. This is like surgery, okay? People do not think that they can perform surgery on a part-time basis, because they'll be killing patients left and right. It is the same thing with trading or investing. You know, if you do this part-time, yes, you might get lucky. A patient, which is kind of your account, if you want to follow my crazy analogy, your account, you know, could do well. But over time, you're not going to do very well, because you don't know what you're doing, because you don't have the foundation. And it's all about building the foundation. And I know it sounds boring, but if you can make it entertaining, say, look, you build a foundation, imagine what is possible. You can build any kind of investment account that you want.
Well, that's great. That's great. I totally agree with you. And I think that, you know, the realization that it is not, even though you made it very quickly, it's not that it wasn't for the lack of work, and you're doing it every single day. This is not something that, again, is part-time, that could be just done flippantly and just let it just go and not watch it. This is something that needs to be watched. It needs to be monitored. It needs to be massaged, if you will, and it needs to be constantly taken care of. So I think that that's good information. I think that's very smart. And for a young man still under 30, Timothy Sykes, author of the book An American Hedge Fund, and check out his site, timothysykes.com. Check out his book, available at Amazon, at Bullship Press, with a P on the end. And I hope to hear from you again soon, and we'll stay in touch and bring some good stuff to the average and the advanced and every investor out there, so they can make some money themselves and live a very profitable life. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, definitely, brother. We're building the foundations. I love it. Think about the future with the foundations. Get excited.
I'm with you, man. And the foundation is big and broad, and it's full of money. So let's just make sure that we keep everybody right on the straight and narrow. So great. Hey, thanks so much. We'll definitely be in touch, and we'll talk soon. Thanks.
Sounds good. Thanks.
Well, that about wraps it up for the Disciplined Investor Podcast, episode number 36. That was kind of a cool interview. And make sure to pick up his book at Amazon and other fine retailers, An American Hedge Fund by Timothy Sykes. And I want you to do me a favor. Be careful, because the end of the year rally or fall is going to be upon us very soon. We're going to find out a lot about the financials in the next couple of weeks when we shake out some of the bags of the financials and really find out what's going on. But more importantly, I want you to remember something. By the end of the year, what we're going to find is a lot more volatility because of selling and buying for tax losses and for the creation of artificial movement window dressing in portfolios. Be very careful out there. Until next week, this is Andrew Horowitz on the Disciplined Investor Podcast saying have a great week. I'll see you real soon.
Are you a disciplined investor? Now you can be. Click on over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com and download your copy of the book that's going to change the way you think about investing. That's thedisciplinedinvestor.com. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contain forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor regulated by the SEC. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.